Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Later this hour, we will have some news to share with you about this program. I will be joined by Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows and Focus producer Lindsay Moon to share that news and then seek out your ideas for future program topics and guests. So please be thinking about what subjects you would like us to explore on future editions of Focus and be ready to call in to share those ideas. That's during the second half of the show. But first, the Academy Awards are this Sunday night, and many of this year's Oscar-nominated films take on some pretty serious issues, from mental health to government-sanctioned torture to coming to terms with slavery in America. In the first half of today's show, we are going to consider some of the political and cultural statements reflected in this year's Oscar contenders with the help of two guests. Richard Laskowski reviews movies for the News Gazette and Champaign and is a retired associate professor of media and cinema studies at the University of Illinois. Richard Laskowski, welcome to Focus.
Hello, happy to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Also with us is Ben Kenigsberg. He is the film section editor of Time Out Chicago. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and we welcome you to our conversation as well. Maybe you have a strong opinion about one of this year's Academy Award nominees or the issues raised within it, or if you'd like to share with us your thoughts about a film this past year that maybe you think hasn't received its proper due, you can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or post your comment or question on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us on either site at Focus 580. Gentlemen, let's start with some of the films nominated for Best Picture. It seems more so than in previous years there are Best Picture nominees with some sort of historical relevance, social statement, or political implication. Richard, more serious subject matter, it seems, than in past years. Or is that just my misperception?
Well, no, it's probably not a misperception. But also there's the fact that there are more nominees in the Best Picture category over the last 3 years now that they've changed the rules.
Yeah, they updated it from, what, 5 to 10 nominees or something like that?
Well, it used to be 5, but now it's 5 to 10 depending on the percentage of votes that nominees get.
Ah.
And as you pointed out, a number of the 9 that are nominated this year do have some sort of historical significance to them. You know, say Argo, Zero Dark Thirty, Lincoln, I guess, you know, even Les Mis to a certain degree, I suppose.
Offers some measure of historical significance. Yeah. Ben, there are also some controversial nominees this year. In fact, Richard mentioned one of them, Zero Dark Thirty. For those who haven't seen it, and you can count me among them, as a matter of fact, I have not seen it. What is Zero Dark Thirty about?
Well, it follows one CIA analyst who's said to be based on a real person who spends an entire decade doing nothing other than tracking Osama bin Laden. I mean, presumably she does something else, but the movie, like Catherine Bigelow's last film, The Hurt Locker, portrays her as completely single-minded. And that this is this obsessive, you know, almost Ahab-like quest to find bin Laden. And I think the controversy surrounding the film has been about the depiction of torture. Some people are saying that the film suggests that torture works and that it was vital to the capture of bin Laden. And other people, including the filmmakers, are saying that if you watch the film closely, it's not actually passing judgment on the efficacy of torture. And in fact, the only information revealed in the film that leads the characters to bin Laden is given at a lunch, not during, you know, a quote-unquote enhanced interrogation session. So I think it's an ambiguous film on some level, although I think, on the other hand, I think there's one scene where it clearly kind of suggests that this character who gives, you know, Jessica Chastain, the protagonist, who plays the protagonist, information is only giving up this information because he's been deprived of sleep. So on that level, It certainly suggests that the torture was part of the search, and an effective part of the search. But I think that's what the controversy's been about, and you know, you'll find passionate advocates and detractors on both sides.
Richard, a common concern that is raised about any film that attempts to depict something historical, whether recent history or deep past history, you'll hear someone say, well, that's not how it really happened, or they got this fact wrong, or this or that. But it seems like we're more forgiving of some films for historical inaccuracies and less forgiving of others. You know, there's this controversy surrounding Zero Dark Thirty, yet, of course, there isn't anybody out there saying, well, Les Miserables, I mean, come on, nobody sings that much. Yeah. And maybe that's a ridiculous example, but, you know, there are some films that are Django Unchained. There's another example.
Well,
for sure.
Even more to the point is Argo, because the final escape of the Americans from Iran involves in the movie chase. Armed men in a jeep chasing after the plane, which didn't happen, but it's good cinema, and you know, when you're dealing with historical events, it's a juggling act, because you know, if you followed this one character in Zero Dark Thirty doing her research for 10 years, that would probably be just watching her sit at a desk looking at her computer screen and various pieces of paper, which, you know, could be handled in a very intense fashion, but it's not, you know, good Hollywood cinema. So you've got to judge, well, what's dramatic, what's true, you know, how much can you diverge from reality and not have it something that distracts you from the film? Now, in Lincoln, for example, you know, there's controversy there about the way the voting was handled on the amendment, and you know, there are legislators from Connecticut are upset that Connecticut is presented as casting two votes against the amendment when, in fact, they didn't. And so something like that, you know, there was really no good reason for presenting it that way, although the scriptwriter claimed that there was sort of dramatic reasons for doing that, but you know, that I think is extremely debatable.
Ben, this does point out, though, sort of underscores this point, that depending on how you perceive as a viewer the seriousness of the film you're seeing, or how much you perceive there has been an attempt at historical accuracy, maybe that impacts how upset you get. If something falls a little bit short, like if there was some fact like that fell short in Django Unchained, Tarantino's film that deals with pretty close to the same era, I don't think people would be quite as upset as they would over it in Lincoln.
Well, exactly. I think a lot of it depends on the style of the film. I think with Django Unchained, I mean, that's very much continuing the vein that Quentin Tarantino explored in Inglourious Basterds, which was quite consciously, you know, a fairy tale, a revisionist film in which the power of movies kills Hitler. Django Unchained, I think, is clearly a revenge fantasy in the same vein. Whereas Zero Dark Thirty takes pains to appear journalistic, and so I think if you start looking at all of the actual dates cited in the film and all of the actual events in the film, you can certainly nitpick to a greater degree. I think, you know, somewhere in between is where Lincoln falls, because you know, like Angels in America, which was also written by Tony Kushner, I think it's a film that uses a historical moment to meditate on grand themes. And I think very much, I mean, clearly one of the subtexts of the film, and maybe hesitant to ascribe too much significance to this because Spielberg had talked about doing a Lincoln Project for a decade, but I think the healthcare debate is underscored in all the political maneuvering that you see in that film. That Lincoln has this very narrow moment through which he has to kind of align all of his allies and push something through that will last for a long time. I think that's sort of the point of the film. And in, you know, while it takes liberties to maybe set up that parallel, I think you know, in that case, I think a bit of artistic license is in order. The you know, both the one of the great strengths and one of the great drawbacks of Zero Dark Thirty is that it has this veneer of objectivity, and I think you know, I happen to think it's a very, very strong film. I think you know, the drawback to adopting that kind of style is that you're going to court controversy from people on all sides, you know, about whether or not what you've shown is accurate.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guests are Ben Koenigsberg, film section editor of Time Out Chicago, and Richard Laskowski, who reviews movies for the News Gazette. He's a retired associate professor of media and cinema studies at the University of Illinois. We are previewing this Sunday's Oscars, focusing in particular, though, on some of the social and political themes permeating this year's nominees. We welcome your questions and comments about any films of the last year you think maybe didn't get the proper due, or any of the films or filmmakers we're talking about, or about the Academy Awards itself, or about the movie industry itself. Whatever is on your mind about film, you can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or post your questions or comments on Facebook or Twitter. We are on both sites at Focus 580. And we will go first this morning to Steve in Kankakee. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Very interesting show. What I'm going to say is going to sound contrary, but I think this year is an outstanding year for movies, at least from the reviews that I've read and listened to. I think the movies are interesting and provocative. And I think your guests, along with movie reviewers, provide a very real service. I'm surprised at this day and age how many people I know that watch into a movie theater or rent a movie having absolutely no idea what that movie's about, or what they're about to watch. I'm always amazed at that. But just to broaden the scope a little bit, I wanted to offer up to your guests the industry at large. I'm in my mid-50s. I can't tell you the last time I went to a movie. And I think with the economics, most of the movies are based upon age group of 18 to 24, and that's just how it is. I mean, that's why you have the Die Hard series and the Schwarzenegger movies and all the shoot 'em ups, because they want to get that demographic in, because, you know, that those are the people that pay the bills. And I'm just wondering if your guests want to comment on that. Do they see the industry ever going back? Which I doubt. It just seems that this is why this year stands out so much, because most of the movies aren't made for people my age or older. And I'll offer that up and listen off air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for the call and the question. What do you think, Richard?
Well, you know, it's Hollywood. They're there to make money, and they're going to focus on the people who are most likely to go to the movies. So that isn't going to be a younger audience. And these days, it's going to be a more international audience. Hollywood films are, you know, a big export for America. And a lot of the film's gross is made overseas. Sometimes well, like in the case of, I think, Mamma Mia, in fact, 75% or around that was made overseas. So, yeah, there is a tendency towards, you know, investing in movies that are going to appeal to a broad audience. But if you look at the Oscar, you know, the nominees for the Best Picture this year, there really aren't any that are specifically targeted for that group. You know, the closest you get, I guess, would be Zero Dark Thirty, because there's a lot of action to it. Argo, same way, and possibly Silver Linings Playbook, because it's, you know, a comedy of sorts. But you know, those are generally, you know, sort of nine solid films. And you know, you're going to keep seeing films like that, but yeah, sure.
But the point's taken that those nine films don't necessarily reflect the top nine grossing box office films.
It's a
whole different list there. Ben, any thoughts?
Well, I'd go to something that that the late Andrew Saris, who died last year, used to say, because he was a critic for really for half a century. And what he used to say was that we tend to romanticize the past. The past was not all that good, and the present is not all that bad. Meaning that if you looked at, you know, the average week's releases for 1947 and compared them to the average releases in, you know, a week from this year, the quality level wouldn't necessarily be all that different. You know, you always had mass appeal films, and certainly I think it has, it's gotten worse in the sense that there is much more market testing and many more focus groups, and I think on some level it's probably harder for filmmakers with an individual voice to kind of get their vision through in a Hollywood movie. On the other hand, you know, whether this is some drastic change from how it always was, I think is you know, up for debate.
Let's take another call. We have Tony on the line from Champaign. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Your guests were saying that it's all about making money, but when you get to the documentary classification, I can't see how you could say that. But anyway, I was curious as to whether your guests had any comments about what Amy Goodman brought up in a recent article about how there's both an Israeli documentary and a Palestinian documentary up for an award, along with a few other really good documentaries. And like to get off and listen. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Ben, tell us a little bit about the best documentary category in the nominees this year.
Well, you have the Israeli documentary he mentioned is The Gatekeepers, which interviews six former heads of Shin Bet, the Israeli intelligence agency, all of whom, you know, take this very kind of clear-eyed view of what they've done and what the consequences have been, and I think you know, kind of ultimately, it ultimately kind of comes to the conclusion. One of them says at the end that as you retire, no matter how much of a hardliner you've been, this sort of job pushes you to the left a little bit. So it's a controversial film. Five Broken Cameras is a diary film, really, depicting life in the Palestinian-occupied territories. The other, you know, films that are up there is How to Survive a Plague, which is about the founding of ACT UP. So it's mostly, it tells a story mostly through a lot of great archival footage. You've got The Invisible War, which is about the epidemic of rape in the military. And you've got the one that seems to be everybody's favorite to win, which is the only one that is not topical, which is Searching for Sugar Man, which is about the musician Rodriguez and how he developed a following in South Africa. At a time when South Africa's cultural scene was quite conservative and in some ways a little bit more isolated from global music culture.
And Richard...
So, you know, in that case, you're looking at something where maybe the feel-good film is going to win, but I think on the whole it's a pretty provocative lineup.
Richard, you saw that documentary. Any comments about it? any reaction to it?
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's a film about the music business to a certain degree. This particular performer, but how the music business works to the disadvantage of certain sorts of individual performers. Sixto Rodriguez was, I'd say, something like a cross in terms of message and sound between Donovan and Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And his music had a profound influence on young white listeners in South Africa in the early 70s. And it is a feel-good film. It's a sort of behind the music without the sort of depressing final act that
right.
many of those stories have. And the film itself is very cleverly structured as a sort of mystery, for, at least for the first half.
They're trying to find out what happened to Sixto.
What happened to him, that's yeah. right, yeah.
And in fact, I recall Weekend Edition Saturday examined this particular documentary, and we'll post a link to that story on our website if you are interested in more information about it. Getting back to Best Picture, the conventional wisdom does seem to be that Argo is likely to win. Is that really because it was the Best Picture, Richard, or because Hollywood never misses an opportunity to pat itself on the back? And maybe there's no greater evidence of that than the moment that Hollywood essentially came to the rescue of people that were stuck in Iran during the hostage crisis. I mean, that you can't get a better story from the perspective of Hollywood of how valuable the industry can be than that, right?
That's right. You have the CIA turning to Hollywood to provide a cover story for this escape. So, yeah, that's probably a pretty big incentive for Academy members to vote for this film. If you recall, last year The Artist won, which was again, a film about Hollywood and making movies and the coming of sound, which was grossly inaccurate in the way it presented that whole process and that period. But it won. It was the favorite all along, and there's certainly something of that, I would say, going for Argo as well.
Ben, maybe the biggest love it or hate it film of recent years is among this year's nominees, the big screen adaptation of the musical Les Miserables. What were your respective, I want to ask both of you, but let me start with you, Ben. What was your reaction to the film?
I thought it was awful. I like the musical, but I thought it was just very, very badly filmed. I think the decision to have actors sing on set limited them to soundstage-like sets, which basically just looked like slightly more cluttered versions of what you see on stage. I thought the actors, either in the case of Russell Crowe, couldn't sing, or in the case of Hugh Jackman, took advantage of because of their license to act / sing, really were not musical enough. And I thought it was filmed in this bizarre way where you had a lot of canted frames and close-ups that was designed to really just counter the fact they hadn't, made it anything other than a filmed stage production. I thought it was one of the worst of the year. So,
Richard,
I think people were voting on autopilot.
Richard, what was your reaction?
Well, frankly, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
I'm not
okay.
a big fan of musicals. If it doesn't have Fred Astaire and isn't Singing in the Rain or My Fair Lady, I probably won't see it for a while, especially if it's on the long side, which...
It's a long film, and they never stop singing, but then that's the way the stage production is as well.
Yes, but the stage production has an intermission.
That's true. and there's another issue, which is if you, you know, thinking about something about watching images on a large screen in a darkened theater, the idea of being, of dealing with constant music and no dialogue, maybe is, for some people, was just a little too much to bear. What do you think of that, Ben?
I don't know. I think I don't think we've had a good test case recently because the musicals of recent years, by and large, I mean, if you look at like Nine, have just not been very good. Have just not been very good movies, and I'm convinced that we could have a resuscitation of the sort of golden age of musicals. But good filmmakers just haven't been hired for the task. I'd say that's an open question.
Mm-hmm. Well, Craig, in terms of what you were just talking about, the darkened theater, singing all the time, no dialogue, there are these special events in cinemas now.
Like the Metropolitan Opera, for example.
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
But
that's a different audience.
It's a different audience. Maybe again, this all comes back to expectations. What we as viewers bring to the film. If you know going in what it is you're facing, you may have a different reaction, I suppose. I want to ask before we let the two of you go. A lot of attention, of course, is paid to the Best Picture nominees and the acting awards during the annual Oscars. Are there particular other categories that you pay attention to, or that you think ought to get more due than they do, Ben?
Well, I think actually the one that's most interesting right now is cinematography. Where it seems to be a race between Life of Pi and Skyfall, which I think is probably the slight favorite. But what's interesting about this category is that Skyfall is shot in high definition digital video, which is a relatively new medium, and Life of Pi is really, a lot of it is a post photographic movie. You know, the backgrounds are created in post production. So I think what you have is not really cinematography in the terms that Hollywood is used to defining it. And one of the filmiest, the most classic Hollywood cinematography of the year in 70mm with The Master was not even nominated. So I think that category is interesting because it's really time to split it into best cinematography for photographic films and best, you know, post-production visual design or something like that, because I don't think it's a category that can really be assessed fairly because you're looking at very different things.
Richard, any particular categories you'll be looking at or anything that you think didn't receive its due over the course of the last year that you wish people knew more about?
Yeah, well, the categories I look at in particular are the animated feature and the animated shorts, because animation's a particular area of my research. And this year, too, I mean, in line with this notion of, you know, maybe cinematography should be reconsidered as a category, I note that Life of Pi is almost an animated film. That, for the most part, that's not a real tiger you're watching. All the other animals are computer-generated, and most of the water effects are also computer-generated.
Those lines have become so blurred with digital technology now. When is it a real image, and when is it a digital image?
And then you toss in motion capture, with The Hobbit and Gollum. It's an interesting time for cinematography and the intersection of cinema and computers.
We'll have to leave it there. Richard Leskoski reviews movies for the News Gazette in Champaign and is a retired associate professor of media and cinema studies at the University of Illinois. Richard, thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Ben Koenigsberg is the film section editor of Time Out Chicago. Ben, thank you for being with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, an announcement about Focus. I will be joined by Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows and Focus producer Lindsay Moon. We will talk about Focus going forward, and we will welcome your ideas for future topics and guests for this program. Please think about the subjects you would like to hear examined on this show, or if you have a suggestion of a particular individual you would like to hear on Focus, let us know about that as well. You can call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, or again, reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter. Find us on both sites at Focus 580, and we will take some of those calls and emails and share our news with you after a short break. This is Focus. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and here is the news, which we shared online last week, but maybe those of you who have not had a chance to check out our website are not aware of it. Today is my last day hosting this program. I have been given an extraordinary opportunity to launch a brand new public radio talk show in Houston, Texas, and so I am moving on from WILL. It is one of those rare moments where opportunity knocks and you kind of just have to answer the door. And so I have. But here is the good news. You are in excellent hands. As you may recall, following the retirements of our news and public affairs staff, some of our staff members last summer, including longtime Focus host David Inge, we established a Focus team, a group of folks here at WILL who have been helping to shepherd the program, developing topics and offering leads for guests. We also hired a new producer for the program, Lindsay Moon, who has done a terrific job developing some great programs in recent weeks. And one of the members of our Focus team is taking the reins as the new host of Focus, and he is a voice that should be familiar to longtime WILL listeners. He is Jim Meadows. Jim and Lindsay join me now. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. Thanks, Greg.
And hello, Jim, and congratulations. We are thrilled that you will be taking on the challenge of hosting Focus.
And I certainly do see it as a challenge. I've subbed on this show and in the old 1 o'clock afternoon magazine several times, but doing that once every month or so is not like doing it every day.
Yeah, I can attest to that. but it's a fun challenge, and I know you're going to do a great job with it. Before we talk a little bit about you and about some of our plans for Focus going forward, I remind our listeners, we welcome during the remaining time in today's show your ideas, suggestions that you have for future topics and guests. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or share your thoughts on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us on either at Focus 580. Those phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Jim, your career extends beyond just WILL. I mean, you've been here since, what, year 2000, I think you came
along? January 2000.
January of 2000. Prior to that, you worked in Peoria.
I worked, I started my career for pay after college, started in Peoria in 1978. I worked for a couple of commercial stations first, making commercials, just doing a routine board shift. But I was very interested in public broadcasting and started working first as a volunteer and later as a full-time employee at WCBU at Bradley University in Peoria. And there I was a jazz DJ late night during the 1980s. I was the morning edition host for several years, and I got my start as a reporter at WCBU beginning in 1989.
I imagine that interest in jazz has stuck with you through the years.
It has stuck with me, and it's interesting because actually I knew zero about jazz before I was pulled in to be originally a substitute DJ for what had been a show hosted by students. But yeah, the music grows in you.
And then, of course, you started reporting at CBU, and then in 2000 came here to WILL, and you've been reporting for all the years since then. And as you mentioned, you've filled in on Focus a number of times before, so it's not like you're an unfamiliar voice to this program.
Not entirely unfamiliar, but doing one show every day, or as what David Inge used to do, two shows every day, just looks mind-boggling to me.
Well, you just take it one day at a time. That's the key. And I want to again remind our listeners, we welcome your suggestions for future topics here on Focus at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Before we take some of those calls, Lindsay, let me bring you in. Let's talk a little bit about some of the efforts behind the scenes that you have been involved in terms of social media and in terms of the new WILL website, which just launched in the last several days.
Right. Right. I guess, well, what do you want to know?
Well, let's start with the new website. I know that there are some folks who got used to the idea of going to the website and seeing what upcoming shows were all about. And so we're in the process of figuring out a way within the new website to make that happen, right?
Right, right. So we just launched a beautiful new website, and Focus has its own page. And when you go to the Focus page, the first thing you'll see is a description of the show, contact information for me if you have an idea. I'd love to hear from you. And then after that, you'll see information and a podcast or a link to listen live for the show that is happening that day. So previously, you would see stuff about upcoming programs. So instead of having that on the website, Focus 580 has launched a Facebook page, which you can find at Focus 580 online. And we're going to start posting information about upcoming shows there, along with other things that go along with the show. For instance, Rick Steves is going to be on the program next week, and we've got a picture of him in his office, because I don't think anyone ever thinks what his office would look like.
Well, he shouldn't have an office. He should have a backpack, and he should be hiking somewhere, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So you can also find like some behind-the-scenes stuff there, too. But to find out information about upcoming shows, we're also going to start posting a blog post on Friday on the Focus page so you can see what's in store for the next week.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Still time for your suggestions for future topics here on Focus at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And let's take some suggestions, and then I want to make sure we talk about some of the upcoming shows and some other things that are in store for our listeners. But let's first go to Marlene in Urbana. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a suggestion. I don't know if it's been done before, but it sort of dovetails with what you had discussed today on your program, and that would be a series that discusses the melding, shall we say, and or confusion between what is information and entertainment in our news broadcasting these days.
Ah, infotainment.
Infotainment, yes. And, you know, a series exploring those issues.
That sounds like an interesting topic to me. The fact that there's a word for this, infotainment, tells you how far this has gone in the industry. So that sounds like something definitely worth looking into.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the suggestion. And that's how it works. Let's hear from you next at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us as well at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're seeking out your suggestions for future topics and guests for Focus as Jim Meadows takes over on Monday. Let's talk about some of the shows that are ahead. First of all, on Monday, Jim, you're going to be talking with an author, and I have to turn to you because you've been reading the book.
The book is by David Toomey. It's called Weird Life, The Search for Life That Is Very, Very Different from Our Own. And David Toomey writes about relatively recent scientific discoveries of life forms that live in places where we didn't think life could exist before, or are living in ways that we didn't think life lived before or didn't evolve in the past. Places with very hot or are very dark. As I'm finding out from this book, you'd think for life you would either need something for the life forms to eat or light for photosynthesis. There are areas where there is neither, and yet there is life there. There are apparently alternatives to those two ways of getting energy. That's one of the things that book will go into. There's even mention in this book of the late Carl Woese, the U of I researcher, who discovered what is not what we now call a domain of life that was different from the ones we've come to know about. And I look forward to asking him about that on Monday's Focus program.
Tuesday is an exciting show. We're going to have a couple of folks from the University of Illinois. President Robert Easter and Chancellor Phyllis Wise will be in studio with us, right?
Right. Both of them will be here. And we're going to have an open line that day, too, so you guys people can call and ask them questions. We're going to talk with them specifically about some stuff that's going on campus and university-wide, including what's going on with cheating and new media, some of the new internet research that's being done there, and there are some changes ahead for university extension as we understand it, so we're going to ask them about that too.
And then, as you alluded to, on Wednesday, Rick Steves will be here.
That's right, Rick Steves of travel shows both on AM 580 and WILL-TV. Is going to be on the show, and this time he gets to be the guest, and we can ask him about his traveling and what advice he has for travelers.
What's like the one tip that you're dying to hear from him about traveling, you know, out in Europe? Or, you know, is there some special something that everyone should know that, you know, that maybe we don't know? Is that kind of what you're
looking for? Well, I haven't done much traveling. All I know that I find myself asking myself is, how light a suitcase can I pack?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thought that I've always had, and this is just because somebody forced me to see the movie Hostel. I'm never staying at a hostel. That's all I'm going to give you. We've got a couple more folks on the line. Let's take some more calls. Louise is on the line from Champaign. Hi, Louise.
Hi. I mentioned an idea to one of your programmers a while ago. You have all those wonderful resources on agriculture, and including the futures markets and all that. There are a lot of us that are interested in that, but we don't understand the inside baseball. You could just do a program or two of explaining how the futures market works and that sort of thing for bright people that don't know much about that aspect of agriculture, I think it would be good. And incidentally, on the BBC Business this morning, they talked about the futures market as being taken over recently by the big banks, the same ones who gave us all the lovely stuff with real estate, you know?
Hmm.
So maybe there's a chance for a scoop there.
All right. Excellent. Thanks for the suggestion. It's a good one, Jim. This is something I think all of us behind the scenes have thought through the years. We ought to do some sort of commodity market 101 or agricultural 101 show.
If you're someone who's not in the business and you've listened to our commodities programming, it can be daunting. I should note, you go to our website at will.illinois.edu and do a search. I think you'll be able to find a past Focus show which talked to the author of a book about the history of the American commodities markets. It doesn't go quite as far, I've read the book, as you would hope breaking the code, but I think it's definitely an interesting listen.
Let's next go to Stuart in Champaign. Hi, Stuart.
Oh, hi. First, you mentioned hostels. I love hostels. I often stay in them. I recommend them.
Oh, okay.
But that's not what I was calling.
All right.
So I would like to hear about another market, about the recycling market. So we have all this, you know, we use a tremendous amount of material stuff. We don't really know where it goes. A lot of it gets buried as trash, but some of it gets recycled. And how and where and why? What things are desirable and what aren't? What kinds of materials are reusable and what aren't? I would love to hear about that kind of stuff.
Okay, excellent.
That's definitely. And I know from covering this just locally that recyclers often talk about the very thin profit margins they're working with for just about anything except aluminum. And so that does raise a lot of questions. How does the recycling market work, or how could it work? How was it supposed to work, but maybe it hasn't yet? A lot of questions that would be good to get answers there about.
Thanks very much for the suggestion. And, Lindsay, before we wrap up here, I know one of the other things we wanted to talk about was the fact that we do have these regularly scheduled guests that appear on Focus, and we have been challenged by this idea since we shifted back to 1 hour a day of how best to schedule them so people know when to call in for personal finance or gardening or something like that. And so you've been working on that.
Right. So I think we've arrived at a solution after talking with all the people that have been friends of the show for a long time. And we're going to go back to doing personal finance every third Friday of the month. And we're going to start doing gardening every second Friday of the month, March through October, starting on March 8th. So we'll be talking with Kevin Waspy and Sandy Mason, and we'll be bringing in some other experts also to join the program and answer your questions.
And, of course, we have other regularly scheduled guests and topics, and so we're still working away at trying to figure out the best way to schedule those.
Right, right. And so it's a matter of scheduling and then how it fits into our calendar. And when we have that figured out, we will make an announcement, and you can find it online and also on our Facebook page, Focus 580.
I think we've got time to squeeze in one more call. We have a caller from the central Illinois town of Belgium.
Hello, and as a longtime listener, you guys do a great job, but allow me to suggest a couple things. Mr. Inge's format was really nice, you know, especially the cooking thing, the gardening thing. He had a format that worked very, very well. That's probably why he could do two shows per day. But the suggestion I have for you folks for something interesting, Central Illinois is full of very interesting people. If you could do some research and find some of our interesting characters in your own neighborhood and interview them, I think that'd be a great idea. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks for the call. And I guess we should mention, Jim, the Neighbors series that we've been working on outside of the realm of Focus.
That's right. And of course, I think point taken as far as opportunities on Focus for interesting people in the area. But the Neighbors series, including a piece that you'll hear in the noon hour on the afternoon magazine today, one that Sean Powers did for us, has definitely been looking up interesting people in Central Illinois, and we're always on the lookout for more. So stay tuned for that, and perhaps if you have some if you have some ideas about people we should be in touch with, we'd like to hear from you about that.
We have just a few minutes left, and I noticed that Bob Culkeen, our station manager, walked in and isn't even sitting down. He's kneeling next to a microphone.
I'm
what's
kneeling
up?
Kneeling next to a microphone. Well, I was going to call, and I said, why should I call? I'm going to walk upstairs and thank you for everything that you've done this past year.
Oh, that's nice
you've
of you.
You've done great things in the community. The station has really appreciated everything that you've done. And the voices that we have here with Lindsay and Jim. Congratulations, guys. Let's keep going. But I wanted to thank you, come up and be on the air with you for your last day.
So, oh, that's very nice of you, Bob.
Lot,
I appreciate
Greg.
That. So we've got lots of great ideas, it sounds like, from listeners. And again, Lindsay, we encourage people to reach out to us
yes.
with other ideas, right?
Yep. I want, if anyone has an idea for a show, you know, I want to know what you want to hear. So my email is linked on our website. Feel free to get in touch with me anytime. And just for the record, Craig did not know that he was going to come in here and
no,
say
I
that.
Didn't know that. I didn't know that. Before we do let you go, any other shows that are ahead that either of you are sort of looking ahead to in the next few weeks that you really want to trump? We've got a minute or two for that.
We are working on a show on what's ahead for the Roman Catholic Church as the cardinals prepare to choose a new pope. And do we have guests confirmed on that at this point?
Yes, we do. We're going to be talking with Kevin Schultz, who is a professor at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And in addition to talking about what's ahead for the Roman Catholic Church as far as the politics and process involved with conclave, we're also going to talk with them about, culturally speaking, what does a new pope and what does the pope stepping down mean for the rest of us, not just people who are believers of the Roman Catholic faith.
I know another show that's ahead has to do with, this time of year, it's something that's on my mind, which is taxes.
Right, right.
As we've long done, we're going to provide people an opportunity to call in with tax questions, right?
Right. So that'll be next Friday. And we're, you know, with everything that's happened with sequestration and all the talk about what's happening with the alternative minimum tax, and we're going to have people here so you can call and get your questions answered. I'm hoping to get a couple of my own questions in, too, so...
And I see Sandy Mason is, in fact, lined up to talk about community gardening on the 8th. Is that right?
Right. So on the 8th, we're going to have her come in, and we're also going to talk with organizers of the community gardens in both Champaign and Urbana about how you can get involved in having a garden if you don't own a home or have a plot that you can plant your tomatoes and peppers and things in. So there are opportunities to get involved with gardening in the summer if you don't have your own space.
And you mentioned the third Friday of the month. It will be devoted, again, to personal finance, and it looks like you'll be dealing with different topics a little bit each time.
Right. So coming up in April is Money Smart Week, which is a program by the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago. And so we're going to be talking with them about some free classes that are going to be offered in the area if you want to go talk about how to talk to your kids about money and things like that. And then also we're going to bring in some other experts in addition to Kevin Waspy to talk about best practices to get out of debt or best practices to start paying off loans from college and talk about a bunch of other topics. And if there are personal finance questions that listeners have, let us know because we'd love to answer them.
All right. Anything else to share today, or is that going to cover it for you, Jim?
That covers it for me. I'll be back on Monday.
All right. Jim, Lindsay, best of luck to you as you carry Focus forward. I know you'll have great success with the program.
And Craig, best of luck to you in Houston. We're sorry you're going, but it's Houston's game.
Well, thank you very much. And I will miss WILL, of course. I've got some final thoughts about that here in just a second. But a reminder, we do welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. That's another place you can put any comments or suggestions for future shows. On Monday, Jim will talk with author David Toomey about his new book, Weird Life, The Search for Life That Is Very, Very Different from Our Own. And before we do wrap up, I do have a few final thoughts. As I do leave, I take this new job knowing that Illinois Public Media's News and Public Affairs Department is in really terrific shape. You heard a couple of the folks that are examples of that just in the last few minutes. Well, in the last year, here are some of the things that we were able to accomplish. Transitioning our news coverage from one dominated by what you'd call spot news and newscasts to in-depth news and features and interviews, and you've heard a lot of those on the air. We developed sort of tag team reporting efforts to cover some big breaking stories like Congressman Johnson's retirement, the Supreme Court health care ruling, the Sandy Hook shooting. And we revamped and kicked up our election coverage on air and online. We revamped Focus, of course, and are producing some terrific shows. And we've brought on some new folks as well. Lindsay is an example of that. Chris Berube is an example of that. He's hosting Morning Edition and All Things and the Afternoon Magazine. And then, of course, the team that's already in place is just terrific. So I am thrilled and feel that WILL will continue to provide a strong and vibrant public service for you in the years to come. And with that, today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.